On this week of Cross Examined, we will be discussing the recent U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Obergefell versus Hodges, in which the U.S. Supreme Court held that sodomites have a right to marry. Welcome, my friends, to another episode of Cross Examine. I am your host, Attorney Jason Robb, and we are coming from Harrison, Arkansas, the lovely town of in the Ozark Mountains. And I just want to welcome you again for to our show. I would like to discuss this 30 minutes regarding the recent U.S. Supreme Court decision in Obergefell, I should say, versus Hodges, the grossly misrepresentation of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in granting sodomite marriages, a decision that literally has caused frustration, anger, just contempt in the people's minds, the vast majority of the American people's minds, on the ability of the U.S. Supreme Court to basically raise its finger to the millions of Christians across this country. And really, it is something that is pretty devastating. You know, the decision that's coming out last Friday that basically allowed hundreds and thousands of years to be wiped away from the face of this earth and create a right just because five people said sodomites have a right to marry. And that's really what it comes down to. This decision that was ruled on by five very liberal justices, basically at their own whim, decided to go against every state in the union, every Supreme Court earlier decisions, every law that the states have invoked by the people since the beginning of time. Basically, the U.S. Supreme Court just said, we don't really care what the case law was. We don't care what the states have created their statutes by the people. We are going to do what we believe is fair. And it is a very disheartening opinion to read. And I would really encourage everyone to go on the internet, Google the U.S. Supreme Court's decision, and read it. Each Supreme Court justice that dissented in that opinion, which include Chief Justice Chief Justice Roberts, Scalia, Thomas, and Alito, they all issued their own dissenting opinions. And I would really encourage everyone to read those dissenting opinions. Those dissenting opinions are really enlightening on their opinion of not only what is going to happen down the road, but really shows that they're concerned that the people are going to lose faith in the judicial system. And as a result of that, they are going to start ignoring the decisions of the U.S. Supreme Court. And so I think it's something that we all need to read those dissenting opinions, read them, meditate on them, read them again. Because again, when you have four Supreme Court justices basically saying that the Supreme Court's majority ruling on allowing sodomite marriages is a troubling time because people are going to lose faith in the judicial system. And when they lose faith in the judicial system, they will not obey the judicial system. And so, very, very enlightening. And because of this decision, in which the U.S. Supreme Court basically created a new right, just out of thin air. It's not like history was on their side. History has never been on the side of same-sex marriage. Sodomites have never been endorsed by the government, not has never been allowed by the people. It's a sickening practice. It is a practice that has been outlawed since the beginning of time. And in the United States, no state has ever allowed same-sex marriage. Not one. And not until the federal government, the federal judges, the very liberal, extremist federal judges decided on their own whim to start outlawing states that ban same-sex marriage. And as a result of this opinion, you're starting to see states that are going to say, we don't care what the U.S. Supreme Court is doing. Texas, the Attorney General in Texas, has basically issued a ruling that said county clerks don't have to obey the Supreme Court ruling. I'm going to read this quote. It says, county clerks in Texas, and this is from the Texas Attorney General, says, county clerks in Texas who object to gay marriage can refuse to issue marriage license to same-sex couples despite last week's landmark U.S. Supreme Court ruling requiring states to allow same-sex marriage, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton said on Sunday. The nation's top court said on Friday that the U.S. Constitution provides same-sex couples the right to wed, handling a victory to the American gay rights movement. Paxton said in a statement that hundreds of public officials in Texas were seeking guidance on how to implement what he called a lawless and flawed decision by an activist court. The state's attorney general said that while the Supreme Court justices had fabricated a new constitutional right, they did not diminish, overrule, or call into question the First Amendment right of free exercise of religion. County clerks and their employees retain religious freedoms that may allow accommodation of the religious objections to issuing same-sex marriage licenses, Paxton wrote, adding that the strength of any such claim would depend on the facts of each case. Justices of the peace and judges similarly retain religious freedoms and may claim that the government cannot force them to conduct same-sex wedding ceremonies over the religious objections, Paxton wrote. So that is from the state of Texas. Then you have Alabama, that basically under Roy Moore, the Chief Justice Roy Moore, who basically said that the U.S. Supreme Court does not have jurisdiction over Alabama's laws dealing with marriage. And there are decisions, or I should say, opinions coming out of Mississippi, out of Kentucky, and some other states that are questioning whether or not they are going to follow the U.S. Supreme Court's decision. Now, this does not mean that all of a sudden every state is going to say, no, we're not going to follow the U.S. Supreme Court's decision. Vast majority of states will, and over time, every state will. It will happen. People are obviously very, very upset about this decision. People just can't understand how five individuals, unelected individuals, can make such a decision as this. It almost kind of blows your mind. But all of this really started back in the 60s. It started back in the 60s when the U.S. Supreme Court's really starting to hand down issues dealing with morality. And so this has been a slippery slope that has been created ever since really the 14th Judicial or the 14th Amendment was set out by the Congress in the 1800s. And with that 14th Amendment, the court has really been pushing these moral issues down the throats of the states via the 14th Amendment. Now, the 14th Amendment, and some of you may or may not be aware of what it says, but it specifically says, in large portion, it says, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privilege or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive of any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. And so as a result of that section within the 14th Amendment, slowly and slowly the U.S. Supreme Court has creeped its decisions, invoking its own personal agenda down the throats of the states. In the 60s, we really saw the flood of decisions coming down, most notably dealing with miscegenation laws. Up until the 60s, every state, for the most part, did not agree with miscegenation. The states throughout the South had miscegenation laws that prohibited different races to marry. And so that was the will of the people, even in the North. Very big segregation laws were up in the North in their major cities, like in Chicago and your other cities in the North. And so the United States, the citizens of the United States, overwhelmingly did not agree with miscegenation laws. But the U.S. Supreme Court used that through the 14th Amendment to basically deny the will of the people to continue on with these miscegenation laws. And now we see it happening once again with same-sex marriage. Marriage is a deep-rooted institution since the beginning of time. The Bible is very clear that it was a union between a man and a woman. And our Western society reflected that. Our society, the people we've come from, our European ancestors, understood this, understood that marriage was between a man and a woman, and it was a special religious institution. And within one stroke of a pen, five justices have decided to do away with the laws of the United States, to do the away with the laws of our states, do away with the laws of our Christian civilization, our Western civilization. They just decided we don't want to continue to follow that. When we come back, I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to continue about this decision. I'm going to do some reading from the dissent from Justice Scalia. He has some very wise words in there and words that I think we all would agree with. So stay tuned, and we come back, I will do some reading regarding the dissent from Justice Scalia and the U.S. Supreme Court's same-sex marriage case. I'll be right back.
Colonial America was so influenced by the Bible and its precepts that colonial America has been referred to as a Bible Commonwealth. This is especially revealed by the biblical laws and principles used in colonial government, including those against race mixing and homosexuality. America truly is a nation founded on biblical precepts.
College students, high school students, business owners, entrepreneurs, learn how you can be a person of influence for a new America. Enroll in Soldiers of the Cross Training Institute. Learn more at www.sotctraininginstitute.com.
Look around the world. Do you notice anything? White people are a global minority. Soon, white people will be the minority in historically white nations. Is it a coincidence, or is there white genocide in our future? What about your children or your grandchildren? Is this the end? Is this our fate? Think about it. This message brought to you by Christian Revival Classics and the Christian Revival Center.
Welcome back to Cross Examine. This is your host, Attorney Jason Robb. And we've been discussing the U.S. Supreme Court's recent decision on allowing sodomite marriage. And that's basically what it is. I hate to use the word marriage, but it really is just granting sodomy a filthy practice, a practice that has been outlawed in every state, has been shunned by society since the beginning of time. It really is a filthy practice. It's something that's taboo. The Bible is clearly against it. It's abomination, so just as much as miscegenation, and it's a filthy lifestyle. It really is. And so often you see shows and commercials. They try to make it as sodomized beings, just a wholesome family or wholesome people, but it really is unbiblical. It's against the norm of society, and they are really just sickening people. I've digressed a little bit, but this decision that recently has come down, I wanted to talk about, or I should say read, a couple excerpts from Justice Scalia's dissenting opinion. Now, I would really encourage everyone to go Google the U.S. Supreme Court's decision. It is about 80, 90 pages. It might be almost 100. It's going to do some be some reading, but it's very detailing regarding the dissenting opinions of each justice, Scalia, Thomas, Roberts, and Alito. Each wrote their own dissenting opinions in this case. And I want to just read a couple excerpts from Justice Scalia's opinion. This really, I think, hits the heart of it. Let me get to it. I have it on my laptop here, and I will kind of try to get part of it here. But one would think that, or let me see here. What logically follows in the majority's judge empowering estimation is, and so they entrusted to future generations a charter protecting the rights of all persons to enjoy liberty as we learn its meaning. Basically, what he was saying is that the Supreme Court is saying that the Constitution allowed future generations to interpret it as they desired. But then he continues, that we, needless to say, is the nine of us. History and tradition guide and discipline our inquiry, but not set its outer boundaries. Thus, rather than focusing on the people's understanding of liberty at the time of ratification or even today, the majority focuses on four principles and traditions that, in the majority's view, prohibit states from defining marriage as an institution consisting of one man and one woman. This is a naked judicial claim to legislative, indeed super-legislative power, a claim fundamentally at odds with our systems of government. Except as limited by a constitutional prohibition agreed to by the people, the states are free to adopt whatever laws they like, even those that offend the esteemed justices' reasoned judgment. A system of government that makes the people subordinate to a committee of nine unelected lawyers does not deserve to be called a democracy. Judges are selected precisely for their skills as lawyers, whether they reflect the policy views of a particular constituency is not or should not be relevant. Not surprisingly, then, the federal judiciary is hardly a cross-section of America. Take, for example, this court, which consists of only 9 men and women, all of them successful lawyers who study at Harvard or Yale Law School. 4 of the 9 are natives of New York City. 8 of them grew up in East and West Coast states. Only one hails from the vast expanse in between. Not a single Southern Westerner, or even to tell truth, a genuine Westerner, California does not count. Not a single evangelical Christian, a group that comprises about one quarter of Americans, or even a Protestant or any denomination. The strikingly unrepresentative character of the body voting on today's social upheaval would be irrelevant if they were functioning as judges, answering the legal question whether the American people have ever ratified a constitution provision that was understood to prescribe the traditional definition of marriage. But of course, the justices in today's majority are not voting on that basis. They say they are not. And to allow the policy question of same-sex marriage to be considered and resolved by a select patrician, highly unrepresentative panel of 9 is to violate a principle even more fundamental than no taxation without representation, no social transformation without representation. But what really astounds us is the hubris reflected in today's judicial pooch. The 5 justices who compose today's majority are entirely comfortable concluding that every state violated the Constitution for all of the 135 years between the 14th Amendment's ratification and Massachusetts' permitting of same-sex marriages in 2003. They have discovered in the 14th Amendment a fundamental right overlooked by every person alive at the time of ratification and almost everyone else in the time since. They see what lesser legal minds like Thomas Cooley, John Marshall Harlan, Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., Learn Hand, Louis Brandeis, William Howard Taft, Benjamin Cardozo, Hugo Black, Felix Frankfurter, Robert Jackson, and Henry Friendly could not. They are certain that the people ratified the 14th Amendment to bestow on them the power to remove questions from the democratic process when that is called for by their reasoned judgment. These justices know that limiting marriage to one man and one woman is contrary to reason. They know that institution as old as government itself, accepted by every nation in history until 15 years ago, cannot possibly be supported by anything other than ignorance or bigotry. And they are willing to say that any citizen who does not agree with that or adheres to what was until 15 years ago, the unanimous judgment of all generations and all societies, stands against the Constitution. The opinion is couched in a style that is pretentious as its content is egotistical. It's one thing for separate, concurring, or dissenting opinions to contain extravagances or even silly or thought expression. It is something else for the official opinion of the court to do so. Of course, opinions, shallow profanities, are often profoundly incoherent. The nature of marriage is that, though it's an endeared bond, two persons together can find other freedoms, such as expression, intimacy, and spirituality. Really? Who ever thought that intimacy and spirituality, whatever that means, were freedoms? And as intimacy is one who thinks freedom if intimacy is abridged rather than expanded by marriage, ask the nearest hippie. Expression, sure enough, is a freedom, but anyone in a long-lasting marriage will attest that that happy state constricts rather than expands what one can prudently say. Rights, we are told, can rise from a better informed understanding and how constitutional imperatives define a liberty that remains urgent in our own era. It stands for nothing whatever except those freedoms and entitlements that the court really likes. And the Equal Protection Clause is employed today identifies nothing except a difference in treatment that this court really dislikes. Hardly a distillation of essence. If the opinion is correct, then the two clauses converge in the identification and definition of a right that's only because the majority likes and dislikes are predictably compatible. I could go on. The world does not expect logic and precision in poetry or inspirational pop philosophy. It demands them in the law. The stuff contained in today's opinion has to diminish this court's reputation for clear and sober analysis. And then I want to read one more section. I think it's very, very detailing. He quotes, hubris is sometimes defined as overweening pride, and pride, we know, goeth before a fall. The judiciary is that least dangerous of the federal branches because it has neither force nor will, but merely judgment, and must ultimately depend upon the aid of the executive arm and the states, even for the efficacy of its judgments. With each decision of ours that takes from the people a question properly left to them, with each decision that is unabashed, not based not on law, but on the reasoned judgment of a bare majority of this court, we move one step closer to be reminded of our impotence. And basically what that says, what he basically is saying there, Justice Scalia, is saying that eventually the people will not follow the Supreme Court's decision. They will just have enough, and because the state and the elective branch and the executive branch has to follow the decisions. And when they see the judicial branch basically overstepping the bounds, then they're going to say, okay, you made your decision, enforce it. And we all know that the Supreme Court can't force something if the states are not willing to follow it, or the executive branch, or the whatever part of the executive branch, such as the sheriff's departments, are not willing to follow those decisions. So this just shows that even Justice Scalia knows that we are treading on we're treading on really on ice here, if you want to call that. We're treading on ice, and eventually it's going to break, because five people, over 360 million people in the United States, five people are saying this is what the law of the land is, and we are going to go against every Supreme Court's decision, every state that has passed laws defining marriage between a man and a woman. Ever since the conception of the United States, they were all wrong. They were all bigots and haters. And we are going to create a new right. And eventually you will see the people will not no longer go with the decision of the U.S. Supreme Court. Little by little, Scalia's right. People will just have enough of it. Again, this is a decision that really is going to be going down on debates for decades to come. It is just one more chip that is going to cause really the breakup of the United States. And the reason we are seeing this, reason we are seeing so much attack on our moral laws, our laws in the United States, is because of the fact that the United States is becoming demographically non-white. Our country no longer represents the people that founded it, and no longer represents our ancestors. The elected judges, or the appointed judges, the five liberal judges on the U.S. Supreme Court, just reflects of the attitude of the Marxist agenda that has perpetrated upon our society and our government institutions, our judicial institutions. America is becoming more and more demographically non-white. We are only in the high 50s as far as percentage of a white population. For the next 20, 30 years, you are going to see a drastic change in the racial makeup in the United States. And so when we see decisions like we see today with the U.S. Supreme Court's decision on same-sex marriage, it's just a reflection of what we will see in the upcoming years as the United States continues to fall in the abyss of darkness. But there is hope. There is hope. Our people will rise to the challenge. Until next week, remember, you have the right to exist.